So what's up with you, Quinnies? What's going on?
Straight up evil.
Leave the dog alone because the dog didn't do a damn thing, and now you're trying to feed him your bodily
Thou
fluid.
Thou shalt kill all of your
fans. Had a dog fish a tampon out of the garbage. It ain't right.
The Bible
you, but you can pretend
too.
Like you were a dog.
Wow.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Straight Up Evil. My name is Jocelyn. I'm the brunette. We've got Katie. She's the redhead.
Hello.
And we have Carly. She's the blonde.
Oh, hey.
Coming at you live and in living color, post-op. From oral surgery, and we are talking about the disappearance of Kyron Horman. So for those of you who do not know, Kyron Horman was a 7-year-old boy in the second grade who went missing from his school in Portland, Oregon on June 4th of 2010, and Kyron has never been seen since. So we are covering his case tonight and spread a little bit of awareness. This case has gotten a fair amount of attention, but as you'll see, I just can't believe it hasn't been solved. And we really, somebody knows something and they need to come forward.
Exactly.
So Kyron was born on September 9th of 2002 in Portland, Oregon. His parents are Desiree Young and Kane Horman. Both parents shared custody of Kyron through the first 2 years of his life. And then by the time he was 2 years old, his mother, Desiree, became very ill with kidney disease and actually experienced kidney failure, almost lost her life, and basically had to move back to her hometown of Medford, Oregon. And she was traveling between Medford and Canada to get healthcare. So not a good situation to have a 2-year-old in. And of course her and Kane were sharing custody at that time, and she had to make a very hard decision and turn over full custody of Kyron to Kane while she got herself better. So the distance between Medford and Portland is about 4 hours. And even in the face of all this, even in the face of illness, all of these things, Kane having full custody, Desiree was still religiously making the trip to Portland, sometimes drive to Portland, pick up Kyron and drive him back to Medford. Like, we're talking about seeing her child as often as possible.
Dedication, for sure.
Total dedication. Yeah. Total dedication from her. So maintain a regular schedule of seeing Kyron. So at the time that Kyron disappeared, when he was 7, he had a half-sister, a newborn named Kiara. And she was born to Kane and Kane's second wife and stepmother to Kyron, Terry Horman. Kane and Desiree had actually divorced 8 months into Desiree's pregnancy with Kyron.
So crazy.
It is crazy. And the divorce papers cite irreconcilable differences, but the media has reported those irreconcilable differences as Kane getting it in with several different women, while Desiree was having a very complicated pregnancy. Okay.
Like terrible.
Yeah. Not cool. Yeah. Not cool at all.
Yeah. None opposite of
so
cool.
Not cool. Total shade. Shade so, factor.
Like, who are you, Kane?
One of these affairs that he was having was with Terry Horman, the same woman who would go on to be the legal stepmother of Kyron and the mother of baby Kiara. So here we have our first true crime synchronicity. One of the Hillside Stranglers, Ken Bianchi, was also stepping out on his wife, who was going through a difficult pregnancy, his wife, Kelly. And she was pregnant with their son, Sean, and Ken was regularly stepping out to quote unquote, go play cards with his cousin. Actually what Ken was doing was stepping out and committing murders. And as far as we know, Kane was just stepping out and cheating on his wife.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. So yeah, you know, right up top, we're just going to go ahead and make the moral judgment here. This is an incredibly shitty thing to do to somebody. And
super shady.
It does not prove guilt or innocence about the disappearance of Kyren Horman. It really doesn't have much to do with little Kyren at all. But a lot of people look at this situation and say, I do not trust Kyren's father because he doesn't seem to be
an trustworthy person.
Yeah, yeah. A trustworthy person. So yeah,
seriously.
So it's just worth mentioning that we don't condone it. It's not, you know,
here it's straight up evil.
Here it's straight up evil. We do not condone fucking cheating on your wife during her terrible pregnancy. You
seriously.
Jerk.
No.
So Kane and Terry did eventually get married in Kauai, which has been ruined by Lori Vallow, by the way. Kauai is ruined.
Yes.
In 2008, Terry gave birth to Kiara. So they're married in 2007. They have a daughter in 2008. So that brings us pretty much up to speed for Friday, June 4th of 2010. This was a big day for Kyren Horman. Okay. For 7-year-old Kyren Horman, this was a huge day for him. This was his science fair / talent show combo at his school.
He was set
to participate in both of them. Now, I couldn't find what he was going to present at the talent show, which is kind of a bummer.
I know.
But I did see his science fair project, and it was on the red-eyed tree frog. It was one of those foldable trifold posters that sit on the tabletop. And he also did a little diorama of the tree frog in its habitat. It's so freaking cute.
And that wasn't his, his favorite animal.
Yes, he loved frogs.
Yeah, he
frogs.
Was like obsessed
so
with
cute.
Frogs. Yeah. He was totally obsessed with that.
So yeah, he went all out for this project. So this is a big deal for him. So Skyline Elementary, where Kyren went to school, opened at 8 a.m. that day. And the school had this light up sign on the road that said, June 4th, IB Inquiry Expo, 8 to 10, talent show, 1 to 2:45. And in another true crime synchronicity, if you'll remember, Ted Bundy tried to pick up a school teacher and successfully picked up a child on a whim after seeing a flyer for a school play that was taking place on the school grounds that night. So it's not the same as a light up sign, but it's a similar set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people point to this and say somebody could have seen that sign, known what was going on, and taken advantage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So as the kids filed in around 8 a.m., the PTA president, Gina Zimmerman, saw Kyren and his stepmother, Terry, in front of his exhibit about the red-eyed tree frog. And it's this moment where we get the infamous picture of Kyren smiling huge with his glasses on, with his project behind him. He's got his CSI t-shirt on.
Love it.
So cute.
He's such a little cutie pie.
Yeah.
Super adorable kid.
He really is.
I have to note this. That science fair project is very good. Like, I know that when we were kids, we were not like printing stuff on computers and whatever. Like, we were handwriting a lot of stuff, but I was very impressed for a 7-year-old. Like, he definitely had a lot of support at home with that because, like, it was just very well put together. I was very impressed. I was like, wow, my 7-year-old project did not look like that. I'm telling you that.
Yeah, for sure.
So it comes out a little bit later, once Terry is actually questioned by the police, that she said she left Kyren at school at 8:45 and witnessed him walking down the hallway toward his classroom. And a child at Skyline Elementary later came forward and said that they saw Kyren by the south entrance of the school at 9 a.m. So the last person to see Kyren is a child, which is super unfortunate. Yeah, it just presents a lot of problems. So fast forward to 3:30 p.m. that day, Kane, Terry, and their baby girl are walking to the bus stop. It's close to their house, and they're going to pick up Kyren. And he never gets off the bus. So they question the bus driver. And the bus driver is like, no, he never got on the bus with me. So now they are like, well, can you call the school like right away and, you know, ask them what's going on and where Kyron is and if something happened, and they're starting to panic. And the bus driver calls and speaks to the school secretary, who says, oh no, he was marked absent today. And at that point, the secretary is informed that no, he was dropped off in the morning and he should have been there. And the secretary calls 911, Carly.
See, no, no. See, this the moment I heard that, the moment yeah, I heard flag. That, I was like, no.
No. Yeah.
For no
I'm
reason.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there
also,
with you.
Also, like, okay, fine if she like calls also, like on top of the parents or whoever yeah. calling. You don't just like, oh, okay, she got it. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Like, this, no, you're still, you would still call. I don't understand. Right. I know. Me neither. It blows my mind.
It's enraging.
I think that this is an example. I think that this is a reoccurring example that there is something ain't clean in the milk
yeah.
with these parents that do that particular thing.
Or it spouses, like sense. in our history.
Yeah,
it's like they're already subconsciously trying to distance themselves.
100%
from this situation.
And I
yes.
Yep.
If you were truly worried,
you
don't care if someone else is calling. You're going to call too.
Mother freaking person and all exactly. the cops and all the things. 100%. Yeah, I don't even have children. Like.
Regardless, yeah. if it was your boyfriend, your spouse, your girlfriend, your
right.
friends.
Like, yeah.
Right.
And this 100. Isn't the last that we're going to hear from the secretary either, who's doing all these things. But I'm like, yeah. why is she doing that? Like, why are they
right here?
School secretary calls 911 again, baffling. And the Portland police, as well as the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, arrive at Kyron's home and the school right at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, as we're saying, like, okay, there's a 7-year-old, okay, who was marked absent that day at school. I remember, okay, and I know that I'm getting up there, okay, but when I was a kid, I remember my parents writing me a note, you know, Jocelyn won't be in school tomorrow, office people, she has a dentist appointment at 10 a.m. They would still call my parents when I did not come in that day. No matter what, if I was not right. in school, my parents got a phone call. So, but Carly, you were saying that you heard something about that shit.
Yeah. So I was watching the little lost boy
mm-hmm.
Episode for him. And it said that the stepmom, according to the secretary, the stepmom had told her that Kyron had a dentist appointment that day. But then when Terry was asked, she said, no, the secretary has it all wrong. It was for the following week.
It seems fucking like a lot of, there's
a lot of issues
I'm
here.
Just going to say.
There's a lot of issues here.
A lot of red
I
flags,
think it okay? seems like there are a lot of people who misunderstand Terry and don't know what she's talking about and get her wrong 99% of the time. And it's all a blame game with this lady 24/7. It's just like, oh, I didn't say that. I didn't mean that. She's just like putting
anyone
all the shit
me.
On it. Yeah.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
But the secretary, like you said, there should still be protocol that you
call. Have to call.
There's
you just
no, like,
have to call.
You don't know if the kid, you know, granted, like allegedly Terry had spoken to her and told her, but like and mm-hmm. you said, Joss, if you're bringing a note, like you don't know if the kids made up the note.
Yeah.
The parent, you know what I mean? Or whatever.
Right.
Like you still always would get a call. Always. Yep. My mom worked at the school. We still got a call.
Yeah. And I don't understand how they're talking to the school secretary from the bus driver, like the bus driver's talking to the secretary and then 911's getting called. What, like in that moment, isn't the secretary saying like, no, you told me you were taking him out of school. So at 5:30 PM that night, a broadcast text message goes out to the phones of all the parents of the children at Portland Public Schools, telling them Kyron Horman did not arrive home today, to see if anyone, you know, who knows, had seen him or maybe he went home with somebody else or anything like that. They just immediately are sending a
okay.
message out to
and
everyone.
This blows my mind too. Shout out to Oregon.
No, they
for
did. This
real.
Is a great investigation.
Phenomenal.
They really
like, how rarely do we ever see something like that?
Yeah.
That quick of a response.
And they need to have those protocols in place.
Yes. Know? Yeah.
And seemingly it should
be a life lesson. Like,
seemingly the child went missing from their property.
Exactly.
Right. That is not an okay thing.
Yeah, this the response to this is you can't fault the response. They did the best that they could. Also with the fact that 8 hours had passed essentially before they even found out that the boy was gone. Mm-hmm. So at 7 o'clock that night, sheriff's office, is coordinating with Portland police. They begin to coordinate search and rescue efforts for Kyren. The media is alerted, and Sheriff Dan Statton, in a true hero move, personally called the FBI to alert them to Kyren's disappearance. Now, this is not done often. This is the FBI gets brought in 2 months, 3 months down the line when the case is starting to stall. They've exhausted their resources. They don't know what to do. This is something that was pointed out. True Crime Garage did a 4-part series on Kyren Horman, and it is so spectacular.
It's so good.
Yes. But they pointed out that the FBI, when they get involved, all of their evidence gathering starts at the moment that they get involved. So anything that has happened prior with the local PD or the sheriff's office, they can't use it.
Oh,
because
really?
It's not part of their investigation. Now they can consider it,
okay,
but it's not part of the FBI investigation. So getting them involved right in the beginning is like crucial. Mm-hmm. A really smart move, very smart move. So around 8 o'clock, we have search and rescue teams at Skyline Elementary. They begin what at the time was the largest search in the history of the state of Oregon. By 10 o'clock, the school had been totally locked down. So they searched crawl spaces, storage areas, classrooms, outbuildings, all of it. No sign of Kyren. A tip comes in at 10:44 p.m. saying that officers should check the train tunnel near the school. And the caller was anonymous and said, sometimes kids play in there. We want to make sure someone has checked that. And it was searched, but yielded no results whatsoever. So on Saturday, June 5th, huge search takes place, led by Pacific Northwest Search and Rescue. And it's about this time that the story breaks nationally. And the sheriff's department at this point is still calling this a missing persons case and not a criminal investigation. Mm-hmm. But they make the decision to round up all the kids and parents who were at the school on Friday and bring them all back to the school on Sunday to be debriefed by the police department and the FBI. This is 300 plus K-8 students. Okay. This is no small feat to do.
Yeah.
And they did it. They brought everybody back and questioned all of them. And this is how we get the boy who saw Kyren at the south entrance at 9 a.m. And, you know, this is the best witness testimony that they can get. So on Sunday, the FBI announces that they have a profiler involved from Quantico and is working on a profile. And that night, the sheriff's office escalates Kyren's disappearance from a missing person to a missing endangered child. But again, not a kidnapping, not a criminal investigation, missing endangered child. And it's about this time where the Horman family stops speaking to the media. And they keep saying that it is not in the best interest of Kyren, is their line. And I have tried to really understand this move, girls, but what do you think about that? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
It makes absolutely no sense. I can't wrap my head around it whatsoever. How would that be in the best interest of Kyren?
I don't know.
In what world? Like, you're someone's missing, you get the word out as much as possible, anywhere, everywhere, to everyone, all the time.
Right.
Like, saturate everything with information.
I agree. I completely agree with you. And I feel that way too. Playing devil's advocate for 1 minute though, putting it into the perspective of what we have seen the media do to people in the past who have chosen to utilize that tool, the Ramses, just someone who has been thoroughly harassed by false claims by the media. So I guess in a sense, I could see the apprehension of not wanting to look like the person that did it.
Yeah.
But in the same vein, I'm right there with you, Carly, that it's like when it's your fucking kid, like it's when it's somebody that's close to you, like you're not going to care about that when it's you're gonna get that information out. Also, so like, but I do see point, that maybe they were apprehensive about what the media may or may not cover about them. Mm-hmm. Right.
And but they do this sometimes point, it's not even a criminal case.
Criminal investigation. So,
why would they be thinking that way? It's just a missing endangered child at this point.
Right.
So like the risk of the
you media want to get that
taking that would
out,
be
right.
not, you know what I mean? Like who cares? Get the word out anyway.
I can't make heads or tails of it. I really can't. Like
Elizabeth Smart was the other one. Her parents got ripped freaking new ones, man. And they had nothing, they had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
They had nothing to do with it. That was the one I was thinking of.
I mean, for my part, we've just seen too many cases where they don't look hard enough at the parents. And it makes me look at them, take a hard look at them and then eliminate them and move on if that's what needs to happen, I don't know. It's the same issue that we had with the Audrey Heron case and Jeff Heron not speaking to the media. It's like, I struggle with that. I really, really struggle with that.
Sure.
So throughout the next week, several things start to happen. So the search and rescue groups, they continue their work. And on June 11th, the search is expanded to Savi Island, which is a long stretch of preserved land accessible only by water or bridge. It's about 6 miles from Skyline Elementary, but they really don't give a rationale.
Oh, yeah. They don't tell us why, right? No,
they really don't give a rationale at that time of why they're looking there.
Yeah, which just shows you that, like,
open investigations. Pisses me off. So they start to bring in divers on June 14th to search the banks of the Multnomah Channel. This is north of Savi Island. And they search a pond near the Hormans home. So
they did, but they also did, I have to say, they did the dog search, like canine units were searching, but also horses.
No,
they used horses too, which I don't know. But
how
that
do you do that?
I don't know, but I saw the footage. There were horses helping, so that's all amazing. The good dogs and horses just helping out.
I didn't know there were fucking service horses.
I'm assuming it's because the area around the school is like so just like thick brush and forest, that it just made sense to like.
Get as much
on
help
a horse
as possible.
And like, right. So I just love that little fact.
I love that. They search a pond right near the Horman home, and the sheriffs maintain, you know, this is routine. This is just routine stuff. So audience, what the hell happened here? How does a 7-year-old boy disappear from school, to be seen again? How the fuck does this happen? Well, like any good investigator, we are going to start with the timeline of the last person who admits to seeing Kyren alive, which is his stepmother, Terry Horman. You know, much like Karina Rosario last week, I would describe Terry Horman as an interesting person. She is, of course, the other woman, right? In the Cain and Desiree story. So right
always,
up top.
Always a red flag.
Right up top. Well, I mean, shit happens, right? Like all that we're mixing it up. There's like, I don't know. I don't presume to know what the hell was going on in that relationship and that dynamic, but she is the other woman walking into this story. Mm-hmm. And so Desiree's family and Desiree herself, given this situation, are like not having it with Terry. Exactly. Like not having it. Like,
and who really sucks here is Kane. So,
oh my God. Terry had a son from a previous relationship who lived with her and Kane and Kyron all the way up to Kyron's disappearance. And in 2005, Terry was pulled over with a blood alcohol level of 0.15, which is almost two times the legal limit. She was described as sloppy by officers on the scene, and she eventually pled guilty to DUI, which is driving under the influence of alcohol, and reckless endangerment of a child because her 11-year-old son was in the fucking backseat of the car.
I can't.
So yeah, so that's her that's really her only criminal past that we have to speak of. Kane does go on to confirm that Terry's drinking was out of control at this point. And Terry received no jail time, but she got 90-day suspension of her license, 12 months probation, and she had to attend an alcohol counseling program. So this is 2 years prior to Kyron's disappearance. Terry has a bachelor's and master's in education, and she was formerly a substitute teacher, but she really dreamed of working as a school superintendent or a school business official. Terry admits of her own volition that her relationship with Kane and the trajectory that it took and raising a young child. I mean, by all accounts, Kane was not anticipating having Kyron full-time, but Desiree got very sick. And so it was sort of a chain of events. And Terry admits that this happening with Kyron completely sidetracked her trajectory to do those things. Mm-hmm. Her being a full-time stepmom, being present to that kid, completely interfered with her doing that.
And didn't she already have a dream get interfered with, her bodybuilding dream?
So yeah, so she was also a bodybuilder, and then she had a child, right? And then the child, obviously, then the steps necessary for motherhood and all of that,
right,
got in the way of her pursuing a bodybuilding career. And the whole, so yeah, seems like this again, everybody misunderstands Terry. So let's talk about what Terry says happened the day that Kyron disappeared. Okay, like we said initially, Terry drove Kyron to the science fair. She's standing there with him with the project. What, Quinny?
Nothing. Keep going. It's no. We're gonna get to it. Let's keep going.
So she's seen by the PTA president. Okay, reputable source saw her.
Yes.
Around 8:15, standing there with Kyron with his science fair project. Terry said she last saw Kyron as he was running toward his classroom around 8:45, and that's when she left the school, right? So as far as she knows, he's on his way to his homeroom. That's it. Terry then said that she ran two errands at two separate Fred Meyer grocery stores until approximately 10:10 a.m. Okay, so she went to two of them. She then said that she drove around town for approximately 90 minutes because her daughter Kiara had an earache and the motion of the vehicle was soothing for her ears. Okay. Then she says that she went to the gym at 11:40 and worked out until 12:40, leaving the toddler in the gym daycare. Then at 1:21 that day, Terry Horman posted the famous photo of Kyron with his project on Facebook. So let's talk about all the things that I just said that don't make any fucking sense. Number one, Terry did not watch Kyron go to class. We don't know how abnormal that is, but people do point it out. She saw him going toward the classroom. She didn't see him go into the classroom.
I'm going to say it's just abnormal in general.
People find that abnormal.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It's abnormal because it fucking is.
But there's a possibility that she, maybe this was custom.
It's wrong. It's the wrong custom. Okay.
But, wrong.
But, hey, all right. You gotta understand, girls, everybody misunderstands Terry. So we're trying to understand her right now. Maybe that's, maybe that was their jam. Maybe that was their routine. Maybe that's what they did. Fine. Sure. Fine. Okay. Next thing, we know from the sign outside that the science fair did not end until 10 o'clock. So why is he running towards his classroom at 8:45?
Yeah. I was thinking that. I'm like, to me, it seems like she got in there. She took a picture to post on Facebook to make sure everyone knows she was a great stepmom and did this for Kyren, and then booked it out as soon as she possibly could. She stayed the absolute minimum amount of time that she needed to be there.
Be there. Yeah.
Like
now, Carly, her toddler has an earache though, and she has a toddler in tow.
That's fine. Then she shouldn't have dropped her off at the gym daycare and gone to the gym for
an hour.
Well,
we're getting to that. We are getting to that. Okay. So next thing, why visit two separate Fred Meyer stores? Terry says that's because the first store didn't have what she wanted, so she went to the other one.
Sure. Okay, which is not, okay, but which is not also not the most crazy thing. Sometimes,
not the craziest thing we've ever heard.
That is
when you're making an alibi. No, it's not the most crazy thing we've ever heard.
It's not the craziest thing we've ever heard.
That's true. It's true.
Next thing, as already astutely pointed out by Carly,
if
the baby has a toothache and you're driving around to soothe the toothache, which is a thing, I do believe is a thing. Oh yeah, earache. Yeah, I got teeth on the brain.
Earache.
She's driving her around because the kid has an earache.
And it is soothing. It can be soothing.
It totally can. Why the hell are you going to leave the kid in the gym daycare after that shit?
No, you would never. You would never.
What was the point of putting her down in the car? What was the point of getting her calmed down?
Like, let the poor kid sleep at home and like be in the comfort of her own home. Under a blankie, watching Dora the Explorer or whatever, okay, and like let the kid have an earache with her stuffies. You know what I mean? Like,
I know. I totally agree. So this, obviously, people are going, "What? What do you mean? This doesn't make any fucking sense, Terry. Jesus Christ! Yeah. Can you, like, come on.
Jesus Christ, Terry.
Jesus Christ, Terry." So on Sunday, June 6th, Terry posts on Facebook, "I ordered 1,000 flyers. They will be coming to our house. I will let people know when they are here and we can go from there. Thank you, everyone." Okay. Cool. Seemingly concerned, putting up missing persons flyers. You know, this is usually the chain of events when someone goes missing, right? Then on Monday, June 7th, Terry posted, "Hidden the gym!" Exclamation point. Okay. Not the best move that Terry has ever made.
I don't understand.
Terry says that the police told her, go about your life, go about your business, do the things that you would normally do.
Oh my God.
I don't think the police counseled her to post that on Facebook.
Yeah.
But this is what she says.
Sure.
That's what they told me to do. The police told me to go about my life like everything is normal.
Okay.
And I listened and that's what I did.
Okay, good
for you. I would never listen. I'm sorry. Like,
okay, it's just
fine. You have to have some semblance of normality with the kid, like your other child. You know what I mean? Like, fine.
She is like trying to thread the needle a little bit, girls. I feel like she's trying to be like, this is my habit. This is what I do. This is the way that it, like, she's trying to like lay out, you know, some sort of evidence or some sort of path that like
that she lives a fucking normal life and well, look at my routine.
Exactly. You know, like, it's normal for me to go to the gym at this time on that. Like, this is my normal thing. This was met with a lot of criticism, as you might imagine. Okay. Keep it to yourself, people with the Facebook. Okay. Just keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
And the next day, Terry made her Facebook private. Because a lot of people, she caught a lot of shit for that, you know? So Friday, June 18th, Terry takes her first polygraph exam and fails miserably. Saturday, June 19th, she takes it again and she fails again, Quinnies. But again, everybody misunderstands Terry. So Terry says she's hard of hearing. She has virtually no hearing whatsoever in one ear. And the detectives did not make eye contact with her during the polygraph examination. This caused her to lose her ability to be able to read their lips and understand what they were saying. And it heightened her anxiety, which can throw the entire test off. So the test results don't matter. It's no big. Listen, I know we don't give a shit about polygraph exams on this podcast. Yeah. We know how fallible they are. But that is, that's rough. For public perception, that's pretty rough. This is the first major left turn in this investigation, Quinice. Okay. On Saturday, June 26th, my birthday, there are two 911 calls that are placed from the Horman residence. Okay. Call number one comes in at 5:17 PM and it's a threat call. So that basically means there's a threat of danger. Sheriff's deputy comes out, responds. It's apparently resolved. Second call comes in at 11:39 PM. And this call was classified as a quote custody issue. It comes out at some point that that day, Kane had moved out of the family home and taken Kiara, Kyron's half sister, along with him, leaving Terry there with no husband and no child.
I just have to say, like, oh, now they can call 911 themselves.
Apparently, they're just chatting just it up with 911. Like, apparently. Twice. However, we're just misunderstanding, ladies, because Terry says everything's good. She gives a thumbs up to reporters on Monday, June 28th, when they confront her with this information. Hey, I heard you had a rough weekend, hun. What's going on there? She's like, everything's good. She says, quote, we heard that rumor, and that's just a rumor that needs to be squelched. Everything's fine.
Okay, Terry.
Okay, Terry.
Yeah, right. Okay.
That night, Desiree Young and her current husband, Tony, asked the sheriff's office to publicly release a statement saying that they are cooperating with the investigation to help with the pressure from the media. So this is a little clue for us, right? They didn't want to talk to the media, and now they're coming to the cops saying, I really need your help. Can you please say that we're cooperating? Because they're coming down really hard on them, and it's very difficult. It's very difficult. And like we said, look at the family, look hard at the family, eliminate the family, and move on. That's ultimately what you have to do. But they're struggling under the weight of this, obviously. And the sheriff's office complies. They said, you know what? Yes, we will release a statement saying that you are fully cooperating with the investigation. But Terry's name is left off of that list. So she is no longer cooperating with the investigation as of Monday, June 28th. Shortly after that, it is leaked to the media that Terry had been served with a restraining order and dissolution of marriage paperwork at her home. So Kane has filed for divorce from Terry 24 days after Kyron went missing. So let's throw another left turn into there, Quinice. July 4th of 2010, the Oregonian reports that a landscaper who worked for Kyron's family told authorities that he had been approached by Terry Horman. She offered to pay him money to kill Kane approximately 5 months before Kyron disappeared. And Kane is shocked to hear this, right? He's also even more shocked to learn that they have a landscaper. Okay, because he did not know that.
Oh my God.
It's just like Larissa Schuster, it Carly.
Is. It is.
Trying to get the grill guy, the grill repairman to get to kill her husband.
Why do these guys, why would these guys know a hitman of any kind? Like, why is it always those blue collar dudes
are gonna have a hitman?
I have no idea. I have no idea. And, you know, there's not, I don't know how much we can take this. I don't know. You know, murder investigations, missing persons, missing children, especially, people insert themselves into that shit. People are trying to get involved.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that. I don't know when that was actually like, I don't know. I would love to talk to that landscaper and find out exactly when and exactly when he knew that it was Kyron Horman's family that was involved. And I would like to know the timeline a little better. So Kane does file a petition for a court order to make Terry vacate the premises of their home. And July 12th of 2010, Terry's criminal defense attorney notifies the court that Terry's not going to contest the order. She will move out. And we get a look at these court documents. And in these court documents, Kane alleges that Terry had started a sexual relationship with one of Kane's high school friends. Cute. Classy. She shared sealed legal information. And she tried to kidnap their daughter from the gym daycare where Kane had her this time. Stop leaving the kid at the gym daycare. Okay, guys? I understand you gotta pump that iron, but just pay a sitter or something. I don't know.
Stay home and do it.
You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. I saw pictures of their house. They got space to have a home gym. So yeah, this guy, his name is Michael Cook. He's a friend of Kane's who showed up in the days following Kyron's disappearance to show his support. He decided to show his support in a different way by beginning a sexual relationship with Terry. They start with texting. That slides into sexting. Okay. And then that careens into meeting up to fuck each other. So chain of events. Okay. Okay. I am just here to remind you that it is July 12th and this little boy has been gone since June 4th. And this fucking tabloid sideshow of a situation with these parents and this family, all they are doing is detracting from the attention on the missing kid.
Exactly.
Yes, it's a Casey Anthony type situation as well, where it's
I don't understand it.
All this deflection, all of this like deflection, all everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you. I mean, obviously, like there's a whole bunch of moral judgments to make in this episode, but like I don't know how you are. I don't know. Terry's going to go on later to really defend that relationship with Michael Cook and say that relationship and say that, you know, that was just to get back at Kane because he was cheating on me and all of this stuff. And it's just like, are we not talking about a missing 7-year-old though? Right. Like, I don't give a fuck Terry. Who you were texting. I don't really, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care. Nobody cares, Terry. We just want to know what happened to Kyron, you know, like it's just you're right, Katie. It's a total deflection. About this time, the police start putting some pressure on Terry's friends, including a 43-year-old woman named Dee Dee Spicer. And she is a real character in this tale. So her condo was searched and she was seen regularly at the Horman house after Kane had moved out and filed the restraining order. And before Terry was, you know, compelled to vacate the property. Dee Dee was also seen driving Terry to and from her divorce attorney appointments. And she admitted to the police to buying burner phones for Terry in the past. Like
red flag.
Red flag.
Red fucking flag.
Like
red fucking flag.
Can you like, okay, let's just listen. We're close friends, right? Can you imagine if I was like, hey, Quinny, can you pick up a fucking burner for me from the gas station so I can
I'd be like, Benny, what the fuck?
Exactly. You'd be like, what is happening? Do you need to talk? I'm like, you know what I mean?
Benny,
like,
do I need to help you bury a body, Benny? What the fuck?
No, I'd be like, think like, are you like hiding from someone? Do you need to get away? Like, do I need to get away?
Are you in physical danger?
Danger. Yeah, for sure. 100%.
This woman just is like, oh yeah, I bought some burner phones for her once in a while. On the day that Kyron disappeared, Spicer was doing gardening work at a home in Northwest Portland. And she left abruptly at 11:30 in the morning and she did not return for 90 minutes. So if we fit that into Terry's timeline, Terry was supposedly at the gym that entire time.
Mm-hmm.
So Spicer, she later denies ever having left that property when she's interviewed by People magazine. So that is a point of contention. That's not something that we can, it's confirmed by people who saw her at work that day. Mm-hmm. And then it is denied by her in subsequent interviews. So, you know, the jury's still out on that, whether or not she left that property. But the cops are obviously interested in her. And, you know, Quinnies, I just keep coming back to poor freaking Desiree.
I know.
I just, doing this research, I just kept coming back to, like, this woman, she has health issues. She's seriously ill. She's going to Canada to get medical treatment she can afford. She's making an effort to see her son and let her son have a positive relationship with his dad and the stepmom. She's made nice mm-hmm. with the woman who essentially broke up her marriage for the sake of her kid.
Right.
Like mm-hmm. this, that takes a lot.
She lives, Terry lives in the home that Desiree and Kane had bought together.
Yes.
Right.
So like she took her husband and took her house and then the kid too. Like, come on.
Like, she does not have to be that way. Did not have to be that way by any means.
No, but she's, but it's all for the kid. Like, it's all for, it's just the polar opposite. Like, this, her parenting, her whole, everything she's doing is all about the kid.
Mm-hmm.
In August of 2010, Kane and Desiree both begin to speak publicly together about changes that they've noticed in Terry starting in 2005, the excessive drinking, the DUI, the hatred for Kyron. He was having some issues. He's a 7-year-old, so he was wetting the bed often. He would often cry for his mother. And it was a very difficult period during the time that he went missing. It was a very tough time in the home with him as a 7-year-old. Mm-hmm. Desiree mentions in an interview how odd she thought this was. And here's where the fucking secretary comes back, Carly. The school secretary is the one who called Desiree on behalf of law enforcement to notify her of the situation.
Oh.
Like, what?
So Kane didn't call her. Terry didn't call her. The school secretary calls her and says, I've been asked to notify you.
Also,
God bless the secretary.
Like, how dare you, Kane, not call your
That is some spineless fucking jellyfish shit.
Yep.
It's like, not call her.
Issued, you know, didn't want an issue if there wasn't an issue. Didn't want even to let her know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
made the poor secretary do it.
It's beyond spiteful, quite frankly. It's like foul to it do is. That.
Yeah.
And like, if the secretary had not called the mom, when would she have found out her child was missing?
Exactly. And what if just by some freak situation, Desiree made the trip down to the science fair and took Kyron out of school?
Right.
Then you've got a whole... two separate police forces now devoting their time and resources and emergency services to a kid who is in fact not missing. Like it doesn't make any sense to not contact the other parent. It does not. No,
it doesn't.
No.
Red flag.
So Kane never calls her. Terry never calls her. She has to hear it from the fucking secretary and she hangs up the phone and immediately calls Terry and is like, what the fuck is going on? And Terry basically confirms everything the secretary said. And Desiree says, all right, I'm on my way. I'm coming right now. And like we said, Medford's about 4 hours away from Portland. And Terry's like shocked that Desiree is coming. She's like, what? Really? Like, you're really coming here?
Like, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to come.
Yeah. Like, okay. What else would I do?
Very, very shocking. Like, just a lot of shocking little tidbits that also, are just like...
It's strange to me that Desiree calls Terry and not Kane in that moment.
I think because... Like, it's
interesting. I'm sure they had much discord. You know what I mean? Like,
she
was the one who saw him last.
Talk to him.
I think...
But she didn't talk to Terry either, I'm sure.
Yeah, I imagine that the secretary informs her that mm-hmm. Terry insists she dropped the child off that day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like... Mm-hmm. But again, so with this secretary who says, oh, I took him out of school for the dentist appointment, whatever, like, again, that doesn't seem to come up in these right. conversations, which is just like
so odd.
This whole case.
It's very strange.
So the search for Kyren continues through the fall and the winter. Dive teams repeatedly searching banks of Savi Island, bodies of water. On January 30th of 2011, the search moves to a forested hills area west of Savi Island, and the authorities are quoted as saying they had new and very specific reasons for searching that area, but nothing was ever found. The formal search task force for Kyren Horman disbanded on July 1st of 2011. Desiree had filed a civil suit against Terry, accusing her of kidnapping Kyren. She sought $10 million in damages, and the judge delayed this suit because he said it could influence the criminal investigation, and rightly so. He wanted to see where that was going.
Right.
And Desiree, because she did not want to get in the way of the case, dropped the fucking suit. And that's all that you need to know about that lady. I mean, that is what you do when you care about finding your kid.
That is what you do when you literally put your kid first before everything else.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, Terry's not going to confess to anything or not going to come forward with the truth with that much on the line.
No.
With a criminal trial and a civil suit.
Right.
And all, like, she's not going to. No. So she dropped absolutely it. Not. And I just, the woman is a tower of strength. She really is.
She's a warrior, straight warrior queen.
So Tuesday, September 7th of 2011, Desiree and Kane go on the Dr. Phil show, which was probably watched by all of our moms.
Still is watched by my mom.
Still is watched by my mother too, to this day. So,
so
watching it right now, actually,
they are talking about Kyren's case, spreading awareness, and they talk about their differences and basically the breakdown of their united front, because they come together and they move apart several times throughout this search for him, because they lean on each other for support and they appear publicly as a united front because Terry is not cooperating with the investigation. But at the same time, you know, Desiree does not have any respect for Kane at this point, given the things that he's done and the choices that he's made. And she says as much, you know, so it's ugly. The whole thing is very ugly. So in 2015, Terry gets a job in Eugene, Oregon as a caregiver for a nonprofit organization. Like I said, she has a master's. This is about the time when friends of Desiree's and people involved in the missing persons effort for Kyren Horman start papering the town with missing persons posters and telling everyone exactly who Terry is and exactly what she is involved in. And she ends up leaving her job in Eugene and moving away. Like, legit. Like, they drove her the fuck out of Oregon. Like, they just were like, oh, you think that you can just, like, go hit reset and, you know, all of this is going to go away? Like, they told everyone she worked with. I mean, it reminds me of Gail Katz, like, just canvassing the whole apartment building, or going to Bob's colleagues at his work and being like, did you know that his wife's missing? You know, like, it's as of May of 2015, the reward for information regarding Kyren's disappearance reached $50,000. Then on Thursday, September 22nd of 2016, Terry goes on Dr. Phil. Again, all of our moms definitely saw this, and she believes, okay, Kyren was kidnapped by a man in a white pickup truck, because Terry herself drove a white pickup truck, and she believes that this is where all the confusion is stemming from.
Now, didn't she only drive the white pickup truck that day? Like, normally she had a red car, and she happened to drive the white truck that day.
Yep. Coincidentally. That is true. Okay. Totally, totally, totally makes sense, Terry. Totally.
Sure,
first of all.
Okay, Terry.
It's so difficult. Stranger abductions are just are so rare, so unbelievably rare. And then just the idea that the car would be the exact same car that she happened to be in on the day. Like, she just has an answer for everything.
So many things. So many fucking things.
And Dr. Phil, it throws it right back at her.
He does. And the fact that she had problems with the kid. And then she's going to go take the damn picture with him at the science fair.
And post it on Facebook.
If that isn't a damn setup, if that isn't some premeditated motherfucking shit, I don't know what is.
Dr. Phil throws it right back at Terry and basically says, what you're saying doesn't make any sense, Terry. And you seem to have an answer for everything. And you constantly put blame on other people, right? So you're just, I was just texting with his high school friend because he was cheating on me. And I was trying to get back at him and I was trying to play these games. All the while, Dr. Phil's asking, but there's a kid missing. Don't you think that there's something bigger than all this little.
Exactly.
So Dr. Phil reveals that Terry's cell phone was pinging that day on a tower on Savi Island. So this is our window into why the police are over there all the time. And Terry denies that. And Terry says that there was no tower on Savi Island, so her phone could not possibly have pinged from it.
How does she know if there's a fucking tower or not?
That's what exactly. I'm saying. Like most of these, and like, I just know from like the Adirondacks, when they put a cell tower up there, they mask it to look like a tree. Like you're not going to,
you're not going to be like, there's cell phone tower number 72 down on Route 79.
Yeah. She just, the lady has an answer for everything. Before we get into this, Terry Orman has never been named a suspect in this case. Okay.
Mind blowing to me.
They just don't have any physical evidence, Quinny.
Right. None. Which is totally understandable, but it's like, come on, eventually at a point you're going to have to put the two and two together.
Yeah. So a book just came out this past year, May of 2020, by Rebecca Morris. It's called Boy Missing: The Search for Kyren Horman. And this book has some pretty big revelations in it. So number one, the author asserts that the bus driver, a classmate, and two of the classmates' family members physically saw Terry Horman walking through the school parking lot with both Kyren and her infant daughter as if they were leaving.
Wow.
This book also says that Terry washed Kyren's jacket and backpack the day that he disappeared. Which I don't fully understand if that was left in the car, or I don't really know. I imagine you get out of the car with the science fair project and you got, you got to help him carry it in and whatever. And I don't know. I just, that is a weird little snippet that's in there.
Well, it's like what True Crime Garage said. Normally, like you'd say, you get the science fair project or whatever. If you have your jacket and your backpack, you would likely go to the classroom first
and put it there.
Drop that stuff off.
Right.
Leave that. Bring the science fair project to the science fair, yada yada, and be gone. And then if that were the case, his jacket and his backpack would have been at the school.
Yeah.
100%. If she didn't bring it the first time, because it wasn't in the science fair room, if she didn't bring it and left it in the car, she left him going to the classroom
without
any jacket and no backpack.
Yeah.
Then she's going to drive around for 90 minutes. Oh, I see Kyren's backpack and jacket are in the car, but I'm not going to bring them to him. Come on.
And then you wash them?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
For what? No. Like,
no. Yeah. No.
So no. The book also says, Terry, that the items, the quote unquote items that Terry had to get from the two separate Fred Meyers were never found. So like she says, she produced a receipt and says like, oh, I was looking for Motrin for the baby, but they didn't have it. So I went to the other store, but they don't have the receipt
for the Motrin.
Well, she produced a receipt from like 9 something AM, but from the first Fred Meyer store, but the items that are associated with the receipt were never recovered.
And there's no footage, camera footage at the stores, huh?
Not that I know of. Did you see anything like that, Carly?
No.
No, I didn't either. No.
Nope. And I want to know, do we know, was it confirmed she was at the gym?
Right.
Because you normally have to, like, you know, swipe your
badge.
This is
2010, too. There's cameras around this.
Exactly. I believe, well, yeah, because it's a 24-hour fitness, right? Mm-hmm. So you do swipe in at any time of the day that you want to go. I do think that there was some confusion about, I saw Terry at the gym that day, but I didn't see her at the time that she said she was there. Mm-hmm. I think there were conflicting accounts of when she was there. Like, she fit her gym time into.
For all we know, Dee Dee could have swiped her gym tag.
He fucking went there at some fucking point just to be able to have it as the fucking alibi, is what it seems to me. So she could have gone at any fucking time and swipe the card, or gotten somebody to swipe the card for her, quite frankly.
Terry also had a gash below her knee and pretty fresh. And when she was questioned by police, she explained that she dropped a weight on her leg at the gym.
Okay. So go to the gym, find the weights. Let's get some DNA.
Drop it on your knee.
Let's figure it out.
And see what happens.
Like, swab the weights. I need to know.
Go to the gym, pick up a weight, put it up over your head, drop it, see what happens.
Put your leg up on a bench, take a weight,
the heaviest one you can get,
onto your leg, and see what happens.
Quinnies, it's March 2021, and we don't know what happened to Kyron Horman.
Oh, God.
The police and the sheriff's office still consider this an active and open investigation. What are your thoughts, Binnies?
Where the fuck is Terry now?
I don't even know, man. I honestly don't even know. I know she's dropped the Horman from her name. I think she's gone back to Malton. I think Terry Malton is her name.
She still has her son?
She still has her son. Well, her son is probably now, over the age of 18.
Yeah.
But no, she's never been named a suspect. And as far as we know, she hasn't made any, you know, appearances with the media since Dr. Phil. Just my take, Quinnies, I don't even know how it went down. Like, it's all so complicated. Mm-hmm. I feel like it would take me so long to, like, really be able to plot out exactly how she did it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't believe that a stranger could have come in and taken that kid.
No.
I just don't believe he was the type. If he's wetting the bed and crying for his mom, he's not just going to go with somebody.
Exactly.
And
he's not going to just leave the school and walk by himself.
And there's way too many people and way too many witnesses there for some stranger to be walking through the school with the little boy without a single child, teacher, person, someone noticing something like that. Mm-hmm. There's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Totally.
And the fact
agree.
That you have all of those people saying they saw him with the stepmom. We saw him here with the stepmom. We saw him here with the stepmom. The other people saw him walking out in the parking lot with the stepmom, for fuck's sake. What the hell? Like, that's
probably more people could have seen them. They just didn't register it because it wasn't an unusual sight.
What's the moral of the story, Quinnies? Don't cheat on your wife when she's 8 months pregnant.
I mean,
don't trust the other woman.
Don't.
Well, maybe just talk to the other woman first. Maybe she doesn't know, because that's actually a thing.
That's true.
It could be an Amber Fry situation.
Sometimes the other woman doesn't know.
Sometimes
so we
do not know.
So I take that back. We can't blame all the other women.
You just gotta turn the volume down on Terry, and you just got to look at it from a logical perspective, and it's the simplest possible explanation. She had him. She had him. She's the only one who had him.
Yeah.
Nobody else ever had him.
She was the last person with him. Yeah.
Like, I will say this, because when I was talking to Michael about it, like, yeah, if you really look at, like, the big picture, the broad idea of it, because there's no trace of anything anywhere, maybe there's the tiniest chance, not that there was an abduction, but that she didn't necessarily end his life, that he's just been taken away and she had something to do with it. I don't necessarily agree. I don't necessarily think that that's the case. I mean, she possibly tried to hire someone to murder her cheating husband. So, like, there's that. She's also a drunk. So, like, who knows? It could have been, like, a drunken situation.
Yeah, which happens so many times. Yeah.
The thing that I have learned from this is that, and I will tell Michael this as well, if for any reason Michael and I, our marriage doesn't last and there are significant others in our lives, if they're going to be around my kids, I will be hiring a private investigator and I will be getting a thorough background check on
any
person. I will know everything that that person has ever done, never will do. Okay.
That's true.
And if I don't like a single thing on that list, my child will not be in the home with them.
Yeah.
Period. And 100%. I'm not saying it's Desiree's fault by any means. It is not.
No.
It is not. But no, Desiree, for my personal thing, that is what I will be doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There's that. For also, when I was watching that little boy lost episode, when they were interviewing Tony, the stepdad, and they interviewed Desiree, and they interviewed a couple other people, like people who worked at the school and like a investigator, reporter person. Everyone talked about Kyron in the past tense, except for his mother. Every single person said Kyron was a yada yada type of boy. He was this, he loved this, he liked this. And she, every single time, said, Kyron is such a great kid. He is such a this. He loves da da da. And it just
Desiree.
I know.
And she's wearing like the missing pin with his name on it. But it just like spoke out to me so much that she never once used
past. Lost. Like it's and never lost. She's not losing hope. Yeah. No,
and she said, she's like, I will fight every day.
No, Carly, that's a fantastic point. Like, this is what we say every time, I feel like. Every time that there is any question about who has committed a crime, it makes me think of Scott Peterson.
Yeah.
When you start talking about that person who is still missing in the past tense, you are now in a different category for me. Yeah. You are now in a completely different category. Like, it's Desiree Young, it's Mary Lyle. Never giving up hope that maybe one day, possibly, because they legitimately don't know.
Right.
Right.
And it's the people and it's who happened. Know.
JC Newgard.
Yes.
I know it's very clear, but it can happen.
Yes, it can happen. 100%.
Ugh.
So Kyron Horman, again, disappeared from Skyline Elementary School on June 4th of 2010 in Portland, Oregon. He is a white male, age 7 at the time he vanished. He was last seen wearing a black CSI t-shirt, black cargo pants, white socks, and black Skechers with orange trim. He wears metal framed glasses and he sees very, very poorly without those glasses. He has brown hair, blue eyes. He was 3'8" tall and 50 pounds at the time of his disappearance.
A little muffin.
If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Kyron Horman, please contact the tip line at 503-261-2847 or your local FBI office.
Oh,
poor kid.
It's a sad one.
There's just no trace. There's
nothing.
And the ones with kids are always extra, extra tough too, man, because...
All right, Quinnies.
All right, Quinnies.
Love better, Joss. Love you.
Yeah, Quinny, get some rest. Quinny, take it easy, Ben.
Okay, Quinny.
All right. Love you, Binnies.
Love you, Binnies.
Love you.
Bye.